All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool, and we have another guest with us today from Miami, Florida.
Joe, how do you, you have an interesting last name, so how do you, can you help us out with the pronunciation?
It's Uzinski.
Uzinski. Okay. Right. Somehow I left off the I on, is it SK?
Yeah, it's very Polish.
Okay.
Okay.
So well, I guess when Grandpa came over on the boat, they cut like 30 letters out of the name. But my view is they should have kept cutting like probably 8 more. So I don't know why they stopped here. It's sort of arbitrary, but.
Yeah, that is a strange collection of letters there. It's almost like a bad Wheel of Fortune puzzle. I don't know.
But
like,
it's weird. You would think nobody would have this name, but I keep running into other PhDs. Uh-huh. Yeah. Who are Jay Uzinski. So there's a physicist named Jessica Uzinski and wow. Historian and all this stuff.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, I got really nervous because there was a Barry Joseph Uzinski. Uh-oh. And he was killed in some freak plane accident. And uh-oh. I got nervous because I thought maybe the Terminator was coming after right. All the Joe Uzinskis in the phone book and I was going to be next. So, but that hasn't happened yet. So,
yeah. But I love the 80s movie reference. So we appreciate, we're always up for good 80s movies references. So
absolutely.
Oh, good.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
So well, Joe, let me introduce Joe. He's an associate professor of political science at the University of Miami. He studies public opinion and mass media with a focus on conspiracy theories, which is exactly our topic today and how people are persuaded and influenced by conspiracies. His focus is on conspiracy theories, misinformation, disinformation. He is the co-author of American Conspiracy Theories and editor of Conspiracy Theories and People Who Believe Them. Joe, thanks for coming on. This will be a really interesting topic given the times that we're in right now, because you see a lot of conspiracies being churned out with the with this pandemic going on.
Yeah, so we actually got some polls into the out into the countryside last week, and we got some fresh data in. Mm-hmm. But these beliefs about coronavirus that are conspiratorial in nature are not fringe. Mm-hmm. Ideas in any way. So right. Just two examples that we asked about. We asked people if COVID-19 was being exaggerated in order to hurt President Trump. Mm-hmm. And we had 29% say yes. Mm-hmm. And then we asked if it was created and purposely spread as I think as a bioweapon. And I think we had 31% say yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So we'll get in after we talk a little bit about our beverages. We'll get into how those numbers compare with other theories to give people a better idea of is that normal? Is that not normal? I also think it's fascinating, Jonathan, that we're talking about conspiracy theories on this episode and Joe is an expert. I mean, that's amazing that coincidence.
What a coincidence.
It's almost as if it was planned.
I know. It's like a conspiracy of sorts. So I'm going to share my beverage.
All right.
But it's going to be super quick because, you know, on quarantine here, on lockdown, I haven't been out of the house in like a week. Not because I can't, because I just haven't, because this has been my life for 10 years as a copywriter and freelancer. So I'm just going to the old fridge. I've still got one more chocolate stout, you know, left.
You're wearing that out, man.
I know my beer game is getting weak with this this conspiracy. I just don't want to fight the toilet paper Nazis and poachers and stuff like that. Like, this is Texas. Open carry is legal here, you know. Mm-hmm. So like,
oh yeah,
you grab the wrong set of toilet paper, I don't know. Could be it. So I just don't want to be around that kind of action. But I know you have a beer that you're very excited about.
Yeah, it's a new one. It's a new one. Innis and Goon, who we've had on before, but this is their barrel-aged Irish whiskey stout. So I'm like you. I don't want to venture out to any grocery stores, given the mass hysteria that's going on. So that's the last place I want to be. But thankfully, I have a liquor store that's not too far from my place. And liquor stores in my state have been, they're still deemed as essential business.
Essential, yes. They're here too.
So I can go down there, walk in the cooler, and they've got a new one on tap. So I am, I was like, man, I gotta jump on this because I was about to go stir crazy.
It's kind of a safe space.
Yep. It's a safe, this, right? Yeah, exactly. So I just stand in the cooler for like 15 minutes or so and hopefully
kill any bacteria,
that's right,
or whatever.
That's right.
Except for I think it's heat resistant, not cold resistant. So.
Whoops. I might be
you
getting
can come
sick.
Here, you can come here to Austin or I'm sure in Miami. Like it's been 90 here the last 3 days. So there's no virus is going to be surviving here in Austin. I think they said yeah. 72 was where it. 78, something like that.
Yeah. I heard Scott Adams say on a podcast today that maybe global warming will be what saves us from the virus.
Maybe the friend. Yeah. that's a Republican conspiracy right there.
So anyway, real quick.
This was coming.
7.4% ABV.
All right.
Nice, thick English stout here. So I'm excited to try this one. I know what yours tastes like, Sean.
And Joe, what are you drinking? You're having water?
Well, I drank too much wine last night. So now I wasn't feeling well. So my wife made me a ginger tea.
Oh, that's nice. That's
very nice. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, we're good. You can make it up tonight. It's Friday.
Originally.
Well, Total Wines is also a essential business. So we made a run there a couple days ago and, we pulled in like 40 bottles.
Wow.
So
that's some serious, hunkering so down.
You guys didn't know how long we were going to be stuck here. So
absolutely.
So what's your wine of choice? What do you tend to gravitate to?
So we were big fans of, California Reds, mm-hmm. and particularly Big Cabs.
Yep.
And we've been stuck on that for a long time, but we started traveling around a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And partially because we've been told we can't go anywhere now, we sort of want to tour the world. So we've gotten wine from like 8 different countries. So every night we're sort of exploring that particular.
Oh, cool. That's one way to do it.
So tonight we're having a German Red.
Ah,
a German Red in the living room.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen some of those little wine tour memes. People taking wine tours of their house.
Yep.
Different, you know, the dining room tour, the mm-hmm. living room tour. So people are going crazy and it's only been a week. but hey, so let's talk conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
That's always fun. And
before we start, tell us a little background on yourself.
Yeah.
Give us a little history of yourself. You're an associate professor at University of Miami. Can you give us a little background of give us some background on Joe?
So born in Connecticut, weirdly on 9/11, moved to New Hampshire with my family as part of the defense boom in the early 80s. And so it should be no shock that I'm a libertarian, mm-hmm. sort of a, you know, white male college educated dude from New Hampshire.
Okay.
Fairly libertarian. Got my bachelor's at Plymouth State, which is way up in the woods of New Hampshire, mm-hmm. and did the fraternity thing. So that took me 7 years to graduate. And then people were making the joke to me like, 7 years, you should be a doctor. So I'm like, screw you. I'll go get a doctorate. So I got my master's at UNH a little while after that. And then I got into statistics, so they said you should go get a PhD. So I did that at University of Arizona. And then as I was finishing there, I got the job here in Miami in 2007. And I've been here ever since. My first research interest was media and why they reported the things that they did and what effect that had on people.
Mm-hmm.
And then around 10 years ago, somebody came to me with the amorphous idea, like, hey, conspiracy theories, causes and consequences. And I was like, no one cares about that. That's cringe and weird and stupid. And but I did it anyway. And for the first couple of years we were working on it, people were like, no, nobody believes this stuff. This is not relevant in any way. And boy, I can't imagine anyone saying that now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. I worked in the financial newsletter industry for a while as a copywriter, and that market tends to be the, you know, 60 plus year old grumpy white man.
Yep.
Which is a lot of the conspiracy theorists, I think, too, big part of the crowd anyway. Yeah, and it was amazing just the number, like, promotions that you could kind of start tying towards or leaning kind of conspiracy always did really well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's definitely a lot of people that buy into it, but I'm sure you can tell us more about that than we could imagine. So let's do that.
Well, it's, I mean, to your point, it sells. I mean,
yeah, it does sell.
And it sells in fringe outlets, but it sells in mainstream places too. And even mainstream sources of news use it, or at least tease these ideas to pull in clicks.
So like why does it sell?
Because people, there's a number of people out there who have this mentality that, you know, the world is run by conspiracies. Events and circumstances are best explained by shadowy, powerful groups working in secret against us. Mm-hmm. And because they don't get that normally, when you sort of tease or hint at it more directly, it sort of pulls those audiences right in to it. So I'll give you a good example of this. The Washington Post ran a couple of articles maybe 2 months ago about UFOs. Now, UFO doesn't mean alien.
Right.
It means somebody saw something, they don't know what it is. Well, so what, right?
Right.
But anyway, they were putting these headlines out there to make it sound like, you know, Navy pilots identify, you know, aliens are flying around everywhere. when in fact it said no such thing, and right. It was very flimsy reporting that they were doing in the first place. But I'll tell you, these things get a lot of clicks. I mean, the number one show or the number one shows that ever ran, I think, on Animal Planet was the one about the Navy conspiracy to kill the mermaids. It was wow. Mermaid the Body Found. That was completely made up, but it was the number one show. And then Finding Bigfoot.
Yeah.
And while
yeah.
Bigfoot's not a conspiracy, I mean, you know, they still haven't found him to let the cat out of the bag.
Yeah.
Well, one of my favorite shows in college was X-Files. I mean, that was like,
yeah,
that was at the top of the list. I had to watch X-Files all the time.
Yeah, mine too. But now it's sort of gone from, hey, here's this fiction show that does these things to the history. The History Channel is now half conspiracy nonsense. I mean, it's right. all ancient aliens
and
you know, stuff like that.
So who are the who are people that? I guess my question to start with is, what demographics or what people are most inclined to buy into conspiracies? Is there a general is there a general audience, or is it, you know, pretty wide range of people that buy into different conspiracies, or are there certain segment of people that buy into certain things that generally the conspiracies that I see are a massive conspiracy, like you said, of certain powers that are in control of things, and they have a certain agenda that they're planning. So what's the audience that usually feeds into this?
So each conspiracy will sort of have its own audience. Mm-hmm. So some are aimed at people on the left. You know, some are more aimed at people on the right. I mean, if I'm trying to push the idea that Barack Obama faked his birth certificate, I'm not going to be shopping that to Democrats and liberals. I'm going to be shopping right. that to Republicans and conservatives. So it's different for each one. But what we find is that the general underlying mentality that leads people towards that line of thinking is even across political party, mm-hmm. across political ideology, across race, across gender, and across age. So I often ask people, like, close your eyes, imagine who that conspiracy theorist is. And they say, oh, it's, you know, some 50-year-old white dude living in his mom's basement who's, you know, got some radical conservative viewpoint and a ham radio.
Right.
But it's not that at all. I mean, just the best example I use to demonstrate that is if you look through all the different hosts that have been on The View, mm-hmm. almost all of them have espoused one conspiracy theory or another, like Jenny McCarthy and the vaccine thing.
Right.
Whoopi Goldberg talked about the faked moon landing. So there have been quite a few, and you could find examples of people of all different backgrounds buying in.
My grandfather didn't believe in the moon landing. I used to think it was funny because I would always, I remember as a kid, he thought it was just a big conspiracy by the government, and They filmed this in a Hollywood setting or some kind of Hollywood studio out in California or wherever, and put it all together. So he was one of those guys on the fringe.
So that one really is fringe. So when we poll on that, because when I ask people think of a conspiracy theory, right, you often get birther, truther, yeah, moon landings, yeah, Kennedy. But the moon landing thing gets about 5% mm-hmm. in this country when we poll on it. And mm-hmm. part of it is because it's a point of national pride for Americans that, you know, we did it. Obviously, we didn't fake it. When you ask France, it's almost 20% that say it was faked.
Ah, interesting.
They're like, yeah, screw the Americans.
They faked. Well, you know, there's that.
What about
there's
Russians? That,
is it on Amazon or Netflix? There's a new series that is, they flipped the narrative, like, Russia won and got to the moon first.
Oh,
and it's a whole, yeah, like the chain of events that happened, right, after that.
Wow.
Great, great premise for a story. But that really doesn't play into the conspiracy theory. But I think, so I'm curious on your thoughts on this, Joe, that I've noticed conspiracy theories, they have just enough proof or what seems like proof to make them kind of believable. Like, you know, they tend to have good quotes, or they'll pull good, you know, a good picture from somewhere or Photoshop it, whatever's required. But it seems like there's always just enough to create doubt. Like, is that how they work? I mean, how does a conspiracy theory take hold? How does it, because even 5%, I mean, that's a lot of people, numerically speaking, 5% of 300 million people, or however you do your polling, if that worked out math wise, that's a lot of people. So how do that many people believe? Like, what's required to give weight to a conspiracy theory?
So it's not so much the evidence. I mean, people tend to think about, oh, what are the evidence that the conspiracy theorists bring with them, or what are the facts, or what are the particular questions that they pose? It's usually, I mean, I think of a model this way, that people have a set of predispositions that will lead them to it. Mm-hmm. And then they'll latch on to evidence afterwards to rationalize it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, I mean, you would like to think that in a democracy, people gather evidence, then come to conclusions, and then act on those conclusions. But it really doesn't work like that at all. Right. It's the conclusions first, and then you pick and choose the evidence you want after the fact. And that's how it really works with the conspiracy theories, because... I mean, there are a lot of people who will just buy in, and then you ask them why, and they're not pulling out, you know, pieces of evidence. Like, if you ask a lot of 9/11 truthers why they believe that the Twin Towers were brought down by a conspiracy, mm-hmm. they're not going to pull out, like, oh, I have this chemical report that shows that it was this particular explosive was found there or something like that. They'll just be like, it just feels right to me.
Interesting.
What about this new, so here's one that's going around on social media now, and I'm sure you're pretty aware of this QAnon mm-hmm. conspiracy theory. So
yeah, QAnon.
Yeah. QAnon that revolves around this anonymous account known as Q. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's basically, I guess it involves taking down deep state members and then pedophile rings. So I've seen this big time, and people that I'm actually friends with on social media that are posting these really cryptic tweets and posts that, like, only people, I guess, in their circles understand, because every time they post them, I have no idea what they're talking about.
It seems really, really wacky. Like, I can go through it a little bit. I mean, yeah. It seems really, really wacky, but it's actually, you know, not that crazy in its basic parts.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's true.
Right.
It's just that these ideas have been around essentially forever.
For a long time,
if you go to Oliver Stone's JFK,
right,
if you watch that movie, it's a deep state, you know, a bunch of deep state pedophiles who are working to kill the president. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially what QAnon is. It's mm-hmm. somebody pretending to be a intelligence operative who's giving clues on, was giving clues on 8chan, now it's somewhere else, right, about Donald Trump's fight against the satanic pedophile sex trafficking deep state ring, which includes the Bushes, the Clintons, the Obamas, and Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
And the queen. And they're all eating babies for the magical powers, which keep these satanic pedophiles alive longer than the rest of us. And soon, when the Great Awakening happens, we will all find out the truth of this, and evil will be banished. And I don't know. Some of their predictions are, you know, we're going to have magical natural cures for everything, and we'll all be rich, and there'll be no student loan debt, and we'll even learn how to fly.
So wow. what happens when when things don't play out? Because one of the things, you know, Sean and I talk about, because we talk about persuasion and influence, and we reference a lot of times Robert Cialdini's famous book, The Psychology of Influence, or The Psychology of Persuasion, Influence, mm-hmm. The Psychology of Persuasion, where he talks about commitment and consistency. So people that buy into something, they try to stay, once you buy into something from a psychological standpoint, you want to support that no matter what. So you're kind of going to, you're going to stand ground as long as you can, no matter what changes or what happens. And so I notice is some of these things, as some of the events don't play out according to the way a lot of these conspiracists say they will, it seems to me, from my standpoint, when I look at it, it seems to me like they kind of shift the game. They kind of shift the way, okay, well, it's different now. You know, what we've learned is something completely different, and maybe it's not Donald Trump taking down these people, you know, these pedophiles and these groups. Maybe it's completely shifted, and maybe it's an attack on him in and of itself, or maybe, you know, things play out. So I don't know. It seems to me that people that buy into things like this, sometimes they shift their perspective, and it's like, no, that's, you know, there's never any solid ground on that. But they'll keep that, you know, they'll stand firm no matter what. They'll stay true to the cause, even if they do shift their principles and what they believe.
Yeah. You can always come up with post hoc reasons. So there was a good study in the 50s and 60s of apocalypse cults.
Yeah.
So when they, you know, the cult was convinced the world was going to end on Tuesday, and then Wednesday happens, and they have to come up with a reason, and right. Nobody quits the cult.
Right.
They believe even more ardently at that point, because they're like, God stepped in at the last minute because of our prayers. Now we have to make sure that we triple our efforts, and that happens over and over again. But I mean, with conspiracy theories more specifically, I mean, think about the birther thing. I mean, you had, first, the birther argument was he doesn't have a birth certificate. So Obama presented his birth certificate. And then they said, well, it doesn't count because this isn't the long form birth certificate. So then he gave up the long form birth certificate. And they said, well, that's forged. So it's like there was nothing that you were going to do that was going to change their mind. So none of the beliefs were grounded on evidence. It was theology at that point. And that's the same thing with QAnon, is that they, you know, Q is wrong about so many things. Like he said, Trump won't be impeached. He was impeached like 3 days later.
Right.
But what they say is like, Q is engaged in giving us real information, but he's also engaged in putting out disinformation to trick the deep state. So he can be right or wrong, and you never know. So to me, it's like, why would you believe anything he said? Because it's all nonsense.
Yeah, but that's brilliant. I mean, that's from a marketing standpoint, that's pretty brilliant. Mm-hmm. So I've got a question, Joe. So when does something go from being like just a theory, and then when does it tip over into conspiracy theory? So like, I don't know, like flat earth, is that a conspiracy theory, or is that just an outdated theory, or is that a theory? Like, because there's a lot of flat earthers around. Like, would you classify that as a conspiracy theory or just bad science? Or
it would depend on what's motivating it. So let me give you a different example just to show the distinction. So I could say I don't think vaccines are safe. Mm-hmm. I could be espousing a conspiracy theory, but then I might not be. For some reason, I just might not think they're safe. If I said I believe that vaccines are dangerous and pharmaceutical companies and the government are hiding that information from us, now I'm engaging in conspiracy theory.
Okay. So does it come down to motive?
Yeah. So I could say, I think the earth is flat, which isn't necessarily conspiracy theory on itself. Mm-hmm. But if I said, I believe that, you know, astronomers and physics professors and airplane pilots and boat captains are all covering up the truth of the earth's shape to deceive me, then I'd be engaging in conspiracy theory. So it sort of depends where it comes from.
Yeah. So, and the reason people would attach to that would be very different. You know, conspiracy theory would be one thing. If they just believe it for whatever reason, you know, that's, you know, they're going to have their other reasons. So, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. Cause generally when you think about conspiracy theory, it's not just something that's dubious or wrong or weird or fringe. It's very specific in the sense that, or at least in how I use the term, it's that you have a group of people working in secret for their own benefit against the common good, in a way that sort of subverts our bedrock ground rules against force and fraud.
Right.
Okay. So we talked right, you know, at the top of the show, we talked about you've done two recent polls and the numbers came back at 29, I think, and 31%, something like that. Recap those questions and tell us kind of where that falls, like in the history of, you know, believability, conspiracy. And then the second part of that question, is that due to recency bias? Is that, you know, or something else? Like, will those numbers typically fade over time or will they get stronger?
Well, we hope they fade. So the first question was, do you think that the effects of COVID-19 are being exaggerated to make President Trump look bad? And we got 29% saying yes. And then the second one we asked about was COVID-19 a, you know, purposely created and then purposely released, perhaps as a bioweapon or something like that. And we got 31% there. So with the first question, what we found when we analyzed the data was that Republicans were much more likely to believe in that one than Democrats. Mm-hmm. And in particular, Republicans who really liked Trump and paid a lot of attention to politics. Okay. And so the reason for that we surmise is that Trump was, you know, putting out these signals early on, you know, and he called it the Democrats' new hoax, that they were trying to hurt his presidency in election year, and that this was no worse than a common cold. So that's why we have a lot of Republicans believing that. Mm-hmm. It's because elites were pushing it. For the second belief that it's sort of a, you know, purposely released bioweapon, it is slightly more Republican than Democrat, but not by much. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason for that is probably that you've had some more minor Republicans like Senator Tom Cotton pushing this idea that the Chinese created it in a laboratory and things like that. In terms of the size of those numbers, I mean, they're not the most believed conspiracy theories right now, but they're more believed than most. So in the last 50 years, probably the most popular conspiracy theory is Kennedy. Generally speaking. So if you take everybody who believes in some form of Kennedy conspiracy theory and put them together right now, you get between 50 and 60% of the U.S. But during the 60s, 70s, 80s, and early 90s, it was 80%.
Really?
Wow. So that's probably the American conspiracy theory. So at 30%, these don't really touch that. But these are more than birtherism was, which was capping around 25% at most. Trutherism for a long time was around 25%. And it's actually been going up. But just because more Republicans feel comfortable buying into it because there's less of a partisan element there now with Bush being out of politics.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what are the number one, like what's the top conspiracy theory now? You mentioned these aren't as big as the current. I mean, besides Kennedy, is there some others that are kind of polling that strongly?
No. So then you go from Kennedy and then you have a big drop off. And part of the reason is that most of the things that get polled on are political conspiracy theories. And once you do that, you're automatically cutting your audience in half.
Yeah. Right.
So if you think about the way the Kennedy questions are asked on surveys, usually they say, was there a conspiracy to kill the president or a conspiracy to cover up the murder in some way? And you get right now about 60%. Anyone can buy into that, no matter who they blame for it. Right. But if you I ask you, you know, do you think Barack Obama faked his birth certificate? Democrats are not going to say yes.
Right. Right.
So essentially what you do with these partisan conspiracy theories is that you're not going to break out further than 25% usually, because it's only going to be one half of the country politically. And then within that half, just the people who are sort of inclined towards conspiracy theories in the first place.
So do you see things like big pharma vaccine, like the vaccine stuff, is that split down political lines as well, or does that tend to be?
Yeah. So vaccines are you, depending on the poll and how you ask it, usually comes out pretty even between both sides. And you have populations that have gotten infected with measles and whatnot because they don't take the vaccines, but for different reasons. So you have people in California who want to be natural and whatnot. So they skip vaccines and then they all catch it. But you also have, church groups in Texas that where the pastors tell them don't take the vaccines, and then they don't. And then they wind up catching it. But it's different motivations for people given their politics. Mm-hmm.
So if you want to start a really strong conspiracy theory, it sounds to me like you don't want to do something political. Like, it may be hot. But if you really want to get widespread traction in a conspiracy theory, it needs to be kind of agnostic politically and kind of something bigger than that. Is that true?
Like, if you were looking for another job and you wanted to turn this podcast thing into, like Alex Jones light.
Yeah.
Here's the advice I would give you is go after the biggest enemies that everybody already hates.
Mm-hmm. Right. Makes sense.
So if you were to
the global elites, right?
Yeah. So don't go after the Republicans or the Democrats.
Right.
Go after the political parties, because nobody likes political parties. Right.
Right. Right.
Don't go after, a specific congressperson, but go after Congress.
Yeah.
Go after the big banks. Big mean corporation. And then you could probably establish a following pretty quickly.
Yeah. So one of the guys that we follow a little bit here is, I don't know if you're familiar with him, Joe, maybe not, but he's in the marketing space. A guy named Russell Brunson. He wrote this book called Expert Secrets. And one of the things he talks about there is, kind of how cults are founded. And it's just what you're talking about. One of the key principles is you got to have a common enemy. Hmm. And you got to find that big enemy, to go after. And that's for, like, no matter what your business is, if you can find an enemy that your customers or your clients can buy into, even if you don't want to create a conspiracy theory, you just want to create more sales and things like that, having that enemy just makes all the difference. And we did there's a book. What was that? The Blair Warren book?
Oh, Jonathan? Yeah. About the Jim Jones.
It's basically, I can't remember the name of the book it's kind of a PDF, but Blair Warren talked about, I think it's called One Sentence Persuasion. Isn't that what it was called? Mm-hmm. Something like that.
Yep.
But yeah, book you might or might not like, Joe. But he talks a lot about like things that people don't really want to admit in marketing and how similar they are to conspiracy theories or cults or all that kind of stuff.
I mean, if you establish that common enemy, nothing else really matters. Hmm. Right. And you see this in politics historically and more recently. So like Bernie Sanders, he's got a clear enemy, the 1%.
Right.
He doesn't have a clear theory about what they do or how they pull off their schemes. Cause out of the one side of his mouth, he says, oh, they're a bunch of free market gamblers. Yeah. Then out of the other side of his mouth, he says they're running a rigged system. Yeah. Can't be both.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like when Hitler said the Jews were subversive communists and they were rapacious money capitalists. Can't be both, right? But
he's playing to both, all sides.
Once you identify the enemy that people don't like, you can then switch the message around to pull in the different audiences who might be concerned about different specific things.
Well, we've talked about this on previous episodes where, Trump has been when he was elected, you know, he kind of made a lot of vague promises out there, but they were things where people from both sides, that both sides could agree on, right? So he didn't want to get into specifics, but there were things that people probably who are blue collar Democrats and Republicans could both come together on without getting into the details of things. And that helped him. That helped his cause back in 2016, I think, because a lot of people that were traditional Democrats switched over and voted for him because of his message.
Or even conservative Christians who would not give Trump the time of day, but because he was going, who he was running against. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been politics for the last quite a while now, is it's more about who you're running against, like who you don't want elected in many cases than it is who you want elected. Like you're almost voting for the person that you don't want as much as you are the person you want. That's the way it's felt to me.
Yeah. There is a negative aspect to partisanship too. Yeah. Right? It's, I have a group belonging, but I hate your group.
Yeah. And it feels like more lately, it's been more like about, you can't win.
Right.
So I'm going to vote against you no matter who my guy is.
Well, Trump's path was, you know, relied on that a lot, but he had other tools at his disposal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and he went after white Christians and he tapped into what we would call status threat.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, so he used the gendered rhetoric, the racial rhetoric, the xenophobic rhetoric, to tap into something that a lot of people are feeling. And he was able to exploit that, particularly in the Republican primary. Because there's a funny thing with you know, Republican leaders, is they look out and they see the party that they want to see, but that's not the party that actually exists.
Right.
Because the real Republican voters are not a bunch of Milton Friedman, Friedrich Hayek, small market people. I mean, their views are probably, on a lot of things, are probably not all that different than Democrats.
Right.
And a lot of Democrats' views are not all that different on some things than Republicans. Mm-hmm. And most people are not ideological in the sense that you would imagine if you watched Fox News and then MSNBC.
Yeah.
But people aren't like that in their views. Instead, there's something more guttural going on that Trump was able to tap into and really activate.
Yeah.
So how do we use like some of the elements of good conspiracy theories, you know, or well-crafted conspiracy theories to persuade clients and customers and use in our marketing and do it ethically? If that's possible.
I don't know if you could do it ethically.
All right.
So let's do it unethically. I'll help you with that.
All right. Let's let the listeners and viewers decide how they want to use it ethically or not.
Let's be completely unethical.
Let's just throw it out there and see how people use it. What are the key elements? We talked about a common enemy. What else is there that you can use from really well, kind of well done conspiracy theories?
So what a lot of my colleagues do is they'll do experiments and surveys where they try to get people to give up their conspiracy theories. So they'll give them authoritative information to get them change their mind back to the real thing. I have done a lot of experiments where I get people to try to believe I try to get them to believe the wrong thing. so I try to see what convinces them of the conspiracy theory, whether it's, you know, rhetoric or something like that. This is what I find, is that if you want to convince somebody of something, they should already be predisposed into buying into it. So you're not going to convince somebody of something they're dead against. It's a non-starter. It's not going to go anywhere. But if you can get somebody who has a set of predispositions and you can thread the needle along those, then you will be able to pull them in. And you never have to be specific and you never have to give great evidence. You just have to align your message with how they already view the world.
Yeah.
So if they think the world is run by conspiracies, then throw out a conspiracy theory. If they have particular enemies that they are concerned about, then name those enemies. And once you do that, they will buy up what you're laying out there, and you don't have to add that much more.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that. We've said dozens of times on this show, you know, one of the marketers that a lot of our listeners know is Dan Kennedy. And he has this saying that, you know, people really need two things or want two things. One, they want to be entertained. And then number two, they want to be they want to be encouraged that their current worldview is correct. Mm-hmm. So I hear you saying, kind of echoing that, is that, yeah, if you can tap into what people already believe and then just maybe make a 1 to 5 degree, you know, offshoot of that, then it's a pretty easy road from there to kind of carry people along that reasoning.
Yeah.
I mean, think about why Alex Jones does so well. It's because his audience is already predisposed to buy into his ideas.
Sure.
Right.
But he can't convince anybody outside of that group. Right.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And it's the same thing with any other conspiracy theory. There are a certain amount of people who can be convinced, mm-hmm. and you just tailor your message there.
Yeah. I think Bernie he did really well with a lot of the younger people, because they were in on this, a lot of the things that he said. But I think when he got into, I think his problem came when he got into kind of the older segment, the people that were a little older, that were like, wait a minute, where's this, all this money going to come from? And, how are we going to give all this stuff away for free? Well, I knew when I was in college and somebody said free loans, or, you know, not having to pay back loans, or free money, free college, man, I would have been on that like crazy. But, I'm not a big fan of that now.
Because you're the one. So then when they say free college, it's like, well, what do you think? I'm going to work for free?
I mean, exactly.
Coming to work here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And they're like, well, the rich are going to pay. I'm like, that's your family.
Right.
That's
yeah. You. Right, exactly.
And you're already paying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's funny. So, Joe, we're running short here, but so what is kind of the big lessons or pieces of wisdom that you've kind of picked up as you've learned, as you studied this, like about human nature, about persuasion? Like, what are some kind of your biggest ahas, or maybe some things that surprised you when you got into conspiracy? Because it sounds like you kind of stumbled into it a little bit.
The two biggest misconceptions I had was that it was mostly people on the right, and it was driven largely by the internet. Mm-hmm. And I think those two are completely wrong. Mm-hmm. So we find almost no difference between right and left. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the internet driving it, there's just no evidence that people are believing these ideas more now, sure, than they did before the internet. So every time I read a story about conspiracy theories, journalists always blame the internet and social media, but that's just seeing the past with very rosy hindsight.
Right.
Yeah. 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 They've been around. I mean, conspiracy theories have been around for, ever.
And you talk about JFK, on both sides. I mean, Oliver Stone, for crying out loud, did a movie on that. Yeah.
So. Go read the Declaration of Independence. Yeah. I mean, the first three paragraphs are the best political prose ever written in the history of mankind. Mm-hmm. The rest of it is a bunch of crazed conspiracy stuff about the king, most of which wasn't even true at all. So,
I'm a former copywriter, still do some copy. And, you know, if you can get the headline, mm-hmm. and the opening, right? Like, it doesn't matter what the rest of the letter says. Yeah. Like, if you get people there, they're sold.
Yep. They're hooked. I'm just curious too. Yeah. I want to go back to this JFK thing before we wrap up. So I see most Americans probably believe, the conspiracy with JFK. I think the problem is there's way too many, conspiracies out there of who was responsible. So I think that, you know, I don't know. Do you see this? I mean, when you have multiple conspiracies, then people kind of gravitate towards the original story. You get too many opinions in there. Mm. It's kind of like in marketing, we say when there's too many options out there, people actually just kind of do nothing and they kind of go with the flow. And I feel like that's a lot of times in conspiracies, where whether it's true or not, like in the JFK, you have too many overarching opinions on what might have happened. And people are like, well, I don't know what to believe. So I'm just going to kind of believe with what we've been told.
Yes and no.
Yeah.
So I mean, conspiracy theories are sort of like fan fiction. It's like, there's no official version. Like there's one official version of the official story.
Right.
But with the conspiracy theories, everyone is free to choose to their own adventure and do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, I call them fan fiction. And when we poll on these things, it's like we can ask about one or two versions of a particular theory.
Sure.
But we can't ask about every one. And generally, if you were to get a bunch of conspiracy theorists in the room, even if they agreed on 9/11 being a conspiracy or right. JFK or something like that, they're not going to agree on how or, you know, or who or any of the details. So it's... I don't know if that dissuades people or if it pulls more people in because they get just get to believe whatever it is they want.
Right. Yeah. The splinter theories that come off of it.
Yeah. Because if you came to me and said, I have this conspiracy theory for you, and I'd be like, well, I agree with most of it and I'll just fill in the holes, you know, with the stuff I like. And now I got my own, you know, a la carte belief that I can carry on. And
Yeah. Because once I buy in, like you said, I'm going to start, maybe I'll just start doing some research and read an article and I'm like,
okay.
I connect the dots a little differently than maybe you did.
This supports what I originally thought.
So, two final questions here for you, Joe. Number one, what is your all time favorite, most interesting conspiracy theory?
When I first started doing the data collection on this, we ran into one, and it was that the CIA was creating an army of secret lesbians. To infiltrate the women's movement in the 1970s and then have erotic trysts with the leaders of women's groups and then blackmail them to take over the women's movement.
Wow. Never heard of that one. That's crazy.
Was Subaru involved in this at all? We just lost them as a sponsor. We ever had them, but so that's interesting. The second question would be, what's the oldest conspiracy theory that's kind of still got legs?
Jews.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Like how far back and like what specifically?
Oh, you're going. Yeah. I mean, we could go back to time, you know, to medieval Europe and then even long before that.
Yeah.
And just that they rule the world or they like.
Yeah. They rule the world. They're out for themselves. They're part of some scheme.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, there's a book written by a Jew, and I remember the statistic that he opened with is Rabbi Daniel Lappin. He opened with the statistics that I think Jews are 3% of the world's population by race, and they control 25% of the world's wealth. So that's a good starting place for a conspiracy theory, I would think. Is like,
yeah, because conspiracy theories are about powerful people.
Right.
Right. You don't hear a lot of theories about the guy with no arms and no legs who lives on the street corner. No one's afraid of him conspiring against us.
His name's Matt, right? Yeah.
but when you have rich people, powerful people, people who have control of things, then that's where the theories are going to gravitate to, like a lightning rod.
You think that's because that gives people an out for their life if it's not going the way they want, if there's these big powerful forces that don't allow them to have what they want?
In some
instances, make it more difficult.
Scapegoating can make them very, very powerful.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So one phrase that we use is that conspiracy theories are for losers a lot of times.
Yep.
So like who complains after after a basketball game or a football game, not the winners, it's the losers. So we were cheated. The refs
got it wrong. They had them cooked. They were cooking the refs
or the other team cheated or, you know, something like that after elections, the winners don't complain. It's the losers who tend to complain and they say, oh, you know, they rigged it or something like that. So it's very difficult to look in a mirror and say, I lost. These are the reasons why I lost. Yeah. I got beat by somebody else. It's much easier to say, well, I'm still better than them. Mm-hmm. But the game was rigged.
Yeah. I mean, the New England Patriots, man, they I tell you, they've got numerous conspiracy theories going about about those guys.
I mean, yeah, they cheating, ball,
cheating,
yeah,
video.
Who's conspiracy theorizing about the Jets or like
nobody or the Browns?
I was like, who cares?
Yeah, it's like, so, are the Browns still in the league?
No conspiracy theories there. What's your all-time favorite conspiracy movie?
Oh, gosh. whenever the X-Files first movie is on, I always watch that.
Oh, yeah.
And I used to love Oliver Stone's JFK. Mm-hmm. But since I teach a conspiracy theory class and I show the movie every semester, having watched it so many times, it's just really stupid and there's so many holes in it. It's just like everybody bet Kevin Costner is in on the conspiracy to kill the president. It's yeah. like he's the only one who didn't do it.
That's funny. So your current favorite, then your favorite movie was which one? The X-Files movie?
Yeah, X-Files movie with JFK probably being the second. And then my third would be, it was made for TV on the Animal Planet, but it's Mermaid, The Body Found. And it's actually pretty interesting if you watch it.
Might have to cue that up during the old quarantine.
Yeah, it explains it ties together human evolution, mm-hmm. Mermaid sightings, and Navy weapons testing into one grand conspiracy theory.
Wow, that's somebody had a little too much punch that day when they were writing that that script.
Well, they designed it to look like a real documentary, so they had like fake doctors, but being reenacted by other actors. So it looked like the fake doctors in the movie were actually real doctors.
Yeah.
And then NOAA, which is the government office that studies the ocean and whatnot. After this movie ran on Animal Planet, they were getting thousands and thousands of calls, people calling, release the mermaids, release the mermaids. Why are you testing weapons on the mermaids? So they had to put up a website saying, no, we're not killing mermaids. There's never been real mermaids anywhere.
Oh,
and then somebody played a joke where they started a website based on one of the characters in that movie. Mm-hmm. Dr. Paul Robertson, and then you could go Google Dr. Paul Robertson. He had a website and says, this website's been taken down by the U.S. government.
Probably has his own Twitter feed too.
So people were looking at this like, oh my God, the government's trying to hide the truth about the mermaid, and now they've gotten to the doctor.
that's a great example of like people will just use whatever data comes out to continue the belief and actually strengthen it.
Right.
That's crazy. But
I don't have a lot of mermaid believers as friends, but I know they're out there. Like, go hang around in a crystal shop and you'll find them.
Right. Yeah.
They're there.
Yeah. Hey, it's just like Bigfoot. You may not see him, but he's out there, right? Yeah. So, well, man, this has been really fun, Joe, and I appreciate you taking some time on your Friday afternoon. And we could probably talk about this all day, but we're out of beer, which means the show is pretty much over. So Jonathan, unless you got anything else, I'll let you take us home.
Joe, how can people find out more about some of the work and some of the stuff that you do? You're writing.
I am
stuff
at joeuszinski.com, JoeUszinski.
Okay.
And they could find my shorter writings and my books there.
We'll certainly post a link. But man, it's been a pleasure. Thanks. This has been a fun conversation, and love to have you back on sometime.
Well, thank you guys.
All right. Well, that was fun, Sean. Interesting topic. Kind of unique for our show, but
I feel like I want to go out and start a conspiracy theory now and put up a website and podcast and the whole bit, you know. I'll be Alex Jones 2.0.
Alex Jones 2.0. Boy, I tell you. You know what?
Sean McCool show.
Fascinating about Alex Jones is that, you know, how he was deplatformed by Twitter, YouTube,
Facebook,
everyone. But yet the weeks following that, his Alexa ranking shot up. So that tells you that people, despite the fact that he lost all this traffic on social media, his website, which I guess was his only platform left. I don't know if he's been allowed back on or anything, but people... You know, I guess people committed to him. They decided, you know what? I'm going to go to the website, sign up wherever I can. I mean, I think he even lost his email list there for a while because his email list provider shut him down as well.
Yeah, I was trying to see if he was still like on, you know, podcast shows, but he's still got a podcast, it looks like. But yeah, it's not Apple, you know. But what? But yeah, I think that's a great point that if your message is strong enough and resonates enough with mm-hmm. your listeners, they will follow you. Yeah. They'll find you.
Yep.
And they'll search you out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think people need to worry less about pleasing their platforms and yep. more about making the message so strong that their right. clients and customers
absolutely
would not dare go a day without them. Uh-oh, he froze.
I had to sneeze.
We'll edit that out.
All right. Well, that's good, man.
You froze for a minute, but.
Oh, am I back?
Yep, you're good.
Okay. All right, guys. Well, that's a wrap for this week. As always, you can find us over at persuasionbythepint.com. You can find us on any of your podcast platforms. Reach out to us. We'd love to hear your comments on the show. And until next week, Sean, it's been fun, man. Stay safe out there, guys, and keep your social distancing.